Welcome to the Giants Talk Podcast. Here's Alex Pavlovich and Cole Kuiper. I know those guys.
Hey, Giants fans. Welcome to another episode of Giants Talk. I'm Cole Kuiper here with Giants insider Alex Pavlovich. And you probably sussed out by the name of our podcast that we're going to be talking a little bit of Giants with you today. That's going to include a farewell to friend of the pod, Mauricio Dubon, Albert Pujols on the mound in St. Louis, Carlos Rodon's worst career start, not just in the orange and black, some tips for fans heading to Coors Field, and Alex's interview with Giants hitting coach Justin Vealey. But first, I should mention that Giants Talk is presented by Wendy's Breakfast, now with a free drink with any breakfast sandwich purchase. Right off the bat, Alex, the Giants fan base was thrown into turmoil just a few days ago when a up and down major league, minor league, middle infielder was traded. You would have thought Barry Bonds was traded. Were you expecting this kind of fan reaction when Mauricio Dubon was traded to the Astros?
That's a good question. I was, I guess, a little bit surprised, but then not really, because I mean, it's a little similar to Matt Duffy, right? Like he's a skinny middle infielder who is a fan favorite. You can easily make the case. I mean, and we'll get to why they had to make this trade, but it's like not a difficult one to make on paper. It's not hard to figure out what the front office was thinking. But he was popular. He was, I think he had a great story, and even beyond the story, was somebody who always had a smile on his face, somebody who always seemed to be having fun. And I enjoyed my time with Mauricio. I always enjoyed talking to him. I chatted with him a lot, you know, just off the record during batting practice and just around. We had him on here one time. It was fun to chat with him here. So I guess ultimately I wasn't too surprised. I was a little surprised that, and maybe I shouldn't be, but the lack of understanding of why it had to be done. But I do think maybe that's sometimes where, like, I mean, I especially, this is my whole life. So it's, I fully know how many options each of these guys has and what the 26-man roster looks like at all times and what the 40-man roster looks like. But I think it was a reminder that, like, yeah, a lot of people don't understand that they had to trade Dubon at some point and that Dubon and Tyler Beattie were not going to make it through the season on the roster. So, yeah, I think we should just probably start with that, is that he was out of options. And Tommy LaStella is coming back possibly as soon as Monday. They were a little bit short in the bullpen. We'll get to that, what that ended up leading to on Sunday night. So just kind of not much balance on their roster, and the fact that they had Dubon and Tyro Estrada, who are similar players in a lot of respects, was not sustainable. And they were able to do it for the first month of the season because LaStella got hurt, because Longoria got hurt, because Wade was hurt, and they had the extra roster spots. But they had, at some point, they had to cut one of those guys, and neither one could be sent to AAA without being put through waivers. So this is getting ahead of it. This is making a trade before LaStella's ready to come back. It made all the sense in the world. I was not surprised at all that they traded him, but I can see why people would wake up on a Saturday morning and go, what, Mauricio Dubon's no longer a Giant, and just freak out.
Hey, I think one of the reasons it felt so out of left field for so many Giants fans was he just finally started heating up this year. Do you think that had anything to do with them being able to trade him rather than just release him? Did his hot week, I guess, play into this in any way other than just to toy with our emotions further?
I'm sure it doesn't hurt when you, and look, I talked to some scouts over the last couple of weeks who were there to look at Dubon and to look at Tyler Beattie, other teams know, but I think most teams are generally smart enough that they're not going to go, oh man, this guy had three good games. Like, now we'll make the trade. But it doesn't hurt when you maybe want to see something out of him and you see him play short, or you see him, you know, finally show some power. It doesn't hurt, but I think this is probably something that was in the works for a while, and the Astros have been keeping an eye on him for a while. They needed the bench help. They're a very, very good team, but they needed some bench help as well. And obviously they're a little bit short in the middle infield because they've lost Carlos Correa, and Altuve has had injury issues. Bregman's had injury issues. So, I don't know that this was because of his three good games. I saw a lot of people saying, yeah, the Giants sold high on him. And I'm like, well, no, not really. This was probably always going to be how it happened, but I'm sure the Astros were happy to see that at the very least.
The player the Giants got in return from him is Michael Papierski. I'm seeing he's listed as a first baseman catcher combo, although it seems like he has shifted and trended more towards first base in the past couple of seasons. Seeing that C there on the stat sheet kind of threw me for a loop. Does this move say anything about Kirk Casale, Joey Bart, and what the catching situation is here on the Giants, or is this more of a he's got versatility, we can try to put him in multiple places kind of thing?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I mean, he, you know, anytime the Giants make a move and I ask somebody with the front office, like, what do you see in this guy? Like, I'm looking at his stats. Like, what exactly is the appeal here? It's almost always the same thing. It's his versatile. He has good plate appearances. You know, look at his on-base percentage in the minors. Look at strikeout to walk ratio in the minors. We think we can get more power out of him. It's just over and over again. I mean, you and I have talked about this. It's the Yastrzemski, Wade, now Luis Gonzalez, we're seeing from him. Like, these guys that they like their approach at the plate, they go and get. And so I think that is the key factor here is the versatility. I don't think this has anything at all to do with Joey Bart. But okay. I will say, and certainly Joey, you know, he hit a homer on Sunday night, but it's – he has had his struggles the last few weeks. Kirk has always been much better the last couple of weeks. I think what people have to realize too is that, like, one of the major rules of building a roster is you can never have enough catching. They have two catchers on their 40 man right now. So it's those two guys. And I think beyond them, you look at AAA. I mean, there's not a lot there. And you look down at AA. Yeah, we do like Brett Auerbach. You and I followed him. The Giants like him a lot.
Board.
Yeah, but he's not ready if something happens to one of their guys right now. So they're in a tough spot if something happens to Bart or something happens to Casale, and just not a lot of depth there. Hennevez is at AAA. I mean, he's barely played above A ball. So, yeah, they needed the catching depth. I think this will help in that respect. And maybe we see him in some way if something happens to a catcher. But this is not it at all. I think people went like, oh, they went and got a catcher or a guy who's been a catcher. That makes sense because Joey Bart struggled. Like, no, this is not an indictment of Bart at all.
That was exactly where my group chat went immediately. I don't even think the fact that he was potentially a first baseman or played other positions than catcher even got on our radar. It was like me and Anthony texting, they got a catcher. What does this mean?
You guys got to put me in the group chat. I would have been like, everybody calm down. This had to be done.
The group chat needs a babysitter. I'm going to add you. We'll start a separate one where you can help us out a little. So depth wise for the Giants middle infield, what does this mean for worst case scenarios? Like Listella comes back. Maybe he's not back at 100% and has to go down again. Does this really change anything? Just going to be Estrada and some other minor leaguer taking that Dubon spot?
I mean, they'll just make a trade with the Mariners and get it. That's what they will say. No, but I'm like, I'm half kidding. But I mean, honestly, they went and got Donovan Walton, who was the call up for a day, and he ended up starting on Saturday, right? So they have, you know, these things are all connected. Like they go and get a left-handed hitting middle infielder, a guy who can play some shorts up if they need it and get some depth there. It is easier to have depth in the middle of the infield, and they do have some at AAA than it is to have catching depth usually. So they should be okay there. I think Listella, we'll see. I mean, you know, I do expect him back this week, and I expect him back during this Rockies series. But yeah, he's not, you know, you don't have a ton of faith in him playing the next 5 months healthy. So I think the fact that they have Walton now, they have Estrada, they have some other options. So they have some guys at AAA they feel like can fill in there. And ultimately, if you have to dip down to like Will Wilson at some point because it's gotten really bad, that's easier to do than dipping down to a catcher who's not ready. So they should be okay.
All right. Well, you mentioned earlier Dubon's story. You know, we've made, I think Game of Thrones is so old and unpopular now, we can't make the who has a better story than Bran joke again. So we'll just pass that. Pretend I didn't just make it. Well,
dude, how is that how it ended?
all the more power to you. I wish, I still dream about that. But I don't know that the Giants ever got the player out of him that they were looking for. And I think that's why this relationship came to an end. But he brought us many, many great moments, and he always did it with a smile on his face. So I kind of want to go down real quick as a farewell to Mauricio Dubon and talk about some of our favorite Dubon moments right off the bat, encapsulating him and what Giants fans liked about him. Was last June in the Giants clubhouse explaining why the team was overperforming so much. Was, we don't have any pricks here. And I think that became, you know, even if it wasn't that phrase being used, but that attitude became a big part of the rallying cry and what the fans latched onto, is this group of just really good dudes having fun playing baseball and winning while they're at it. And I don't know that that attitude ever really left. That's kind of encapsulated the Gabe Kapler era of the team, and we'll always have that. What's a Dubon moment that comes to mind for you, Alex?
That's a good one. I wish I had been in the group chat to hear about that one. I forgot about that on Saturday, and that is a good one. And I actually was talking to Alex Cobb about this last week, because he was mentioning, you know, we forget sometimes, like for us now, it's been a couple years of this, really a year and 2 months of this version of the Giants and this kind of group that just seems to be totally interchangeable and everybody's totally cool with everything. And they all seem to get along well, but it's still a little jarring for guys who come from outside. And Cobb was saying that last week. He's like, I'm sitting there in spring training going like, that guy's a pretty good player and he's getting platooned in spring training games. Like, what's going on here? And he started literally asking some guys like, what is going on here? And they're like, this is just kind of how we do it here. And he's like, this is not how other teams do it. So I think we've gotten so used to it that sometimes we forget that there are no pricks in here is really, really rare still. Also, you kind of look like Alex Cobb. I don't know if you ever realized that, but especially when the beard's grown out.
Thanks, man. Thanks.
Yeah. So you should lean into that a little bit.
Well, I'll get a Cobb jersey and start signing autographs outside the ballpark.
But that was a good one from him. I really enjoyed a couple weeks ago when it seemed like he had kind of the hints of a mustache going. And I asked him during BP, and he said, yeah, I've been growing this for 3 weeks. I haven't shaved. I'm preparing for Mustache May. So I like that he had very little chance of growing a mustache, but still tried to lean into Mustache May.
A little devastating to see him in the Astros clubhouse, completely clean shaven. First move after leaving the Giants was to just take care of that.
It's like going to the Yankees.
Yeah, I guess with that wispy little like high school mustache, you don't want to get mocked.
Nobody would have understood in Houston.
Yeah, like, what is this, dude? The one that comes to mind for me when I think of Dubon is his first inning home run off Kershaw last May, where he did the sword celebration. The Giants-Dodgers tension was very, very high. I was about to say at an all-time high, but I don't even think that is an all-season high. Last year was quite something for Giants-Dodgers fans. But that was a great one. And then, of course, bunting for a hit against the Padres earlier this year.
Yeah.
Another just movement he kicked off for the Giants. The no pricks here thing and the we will be having fun continuing to play hard no matter what situation the game's in movement. So he left an impact on this franchise and on this fan base.
Two more.
Thank you, here. Mauricio.
Mauricio drinking a beer very casually after that bunt. That was a good one. That image will live on. And yes. Look, I mean, we both like Mauricio. We understand why people are sad. He did not reach expectations in San Francisco. And part of it was because there were a lot of mistakes on the bases. So
right.
I think that's part of the story here. And I think that's part of why you always understood why Estrada was going to be the one who won out there. Those are not highlights necessarily, but that was entertaining. I mean, that for a team that does not do that really anymore, he was just kind of out on his own page a lot, which was, it was always entertaining at the very least.
It kind of made me feel like, and I have no idea, this is, I'm sure, not accurate at all, but it just seemed like he was having so much fun that he'd get caught up in the moment and just go.
I think
he got
caught up in the moment a lot.
Yeah.
You know what my favorite, this is not a good one either, but remember when he ran through the stop sign last year? Just like that was a very memeable image. So
No,
it was entertaining.
That photo you're talking about of him drinking like a blue moon, kind of sheepishly kind of with the look on his face as if he's a 19-year-old getting caught drinking a Blue Moon.
Yes,
it's classic, and that will be forever memeable.
Indeed. He was very memeable.
And as we said, he did join us here on the podcast. So bonus points for that. We've had a lot of nice guys who have worn the orange and black on this podcast. Now let's talk about something a little less exciting, and that's the Giants losing 2 of 3 to the Cardinals. Not going to fixate too much on the ugliness of some of the games in this series. I'm going to go directly though to something that is going to be a baseball moment a first ballot Hall of Famer never forgets, and that is Albert Pujols pitching on the mound in yesterday's game. Makes you forget the Giants got blown out, but there's a lot to discuss there. Is there anything you want to, I've got questions for you. I've got hot takes. Is there anything you want to start with though, Alex?
Yeah, there was somebody who on Twitter responded right away with, well, now you guys have something to talk about on Giants Talk tomorrow morning. And I was like, yeah, no, legitimately, I had the section for the series and I'm like, I don't know what to talk about. Cause it, when you get smoked like that, you just kind of like, who do you blame? You don't really, Carlos Rodon had a bad day. You don't really blame anybody. He had a bad day. Their bullpen had a bad day. It happens. And I think that's the reason sometimes you see, usually, and the Giants did it too with Gonzalez, but that's the reason you see a guy go out on the mound is not just to save bullets from relievers, but also to kind of lighten the mood a little bit and be like, well, this sucked. We got our asses kicked for 2 days after winning on Friday night and really was never in doubt on Sunday night baseball, no less. So they throw a position player out there and Gonzalez is having some fun and hitting 82, 83. And then Albert Pujols wipes that completely off the table. So it was cool. I think what stood out to me was they showed the Giants bench and like they were so into it. And even how often do you see Gabe Kapler smile in a dugout? Not
especially when the team's down like 16 runs.
Yeah, I think it is a reminder. It's a reminder, like even though you and I think we're like this guy's been in Major League Baseball our whole life, basically. Like I don't know that we have wrapped our heads around kind of what's going on there in St. Louis with Pujols and Molina and Wainwright, and it's insane that those three guys are still out there and those three guys can still start a game together. It's insane. I don't think it's a big enough story.
It really makes me wish that Tony La Russa was with the Cardinals for 1 year at age 82. Yeah. Or
you know
whatever.
What else I thought? It made me wish, and I don't blame him at all, but I wish Buster had a farewell tour in some respect. So we get Buster on the mound and blow out. Cause you don't see this unless they know it's his last year and everybody's kind of celebrating it. So that part of it was cool. I thought the other thing that stood out to me was Evan Longoria asking for the ball after he got a hit. And you kind of, I think it's the same with Longoria a little bit. I didn't recognize how long he's been around. Like these two guys have been going back and forth for over a decade. So they've known each other. They've been in all-star games together. I thought it was a really cool moment.
Yeah. And Longo getting that ball, very cool. Add it to your collection. I really hope Pujols kept that final strikeout on Lamont Wade Jr. ball for his collection. I don't know if he's a sentimental guy like that, but that's a piece of memorabilia I think he's going to want to have.
He almost got the double play and he was ready to explode on the mound. So he seemed into it.
He did seem into it. He's the DH in this game. He comes in to pitch. When you see a position player pitching, it's usually not the DH. So was this the first non-Otani example of the Otani rule in action?
I think Will Myers did it against the Giants.
Okay, you're right. He did.
So it's
I thought I had something there. And
we're hitting a very gray area. I joked on Twitter that Logan Webb is no longer the last Giants pitcher to hit a home run because Gonzalez hit one when he was, which is like, I guess by the letter of the law is true, but nobody's ever going to look back at it and be like, oh yeah, Luis Gonzalez is the last Giants pitcher to hit a home run. So, but it is, I think Myers might've hit a home run when he pitched that night. So we're getting into a very gray area of like which pitchers have hit a home run, who is a DH, who is a pitcher. I just view them all as position players, but it's getting a little fuzzy.
Well, judging by Albert Pujols' pitching motion, you would never guess he was a position player. That was just such a gorgeous windup. I mean, if you can't tell because you're listening to this on an audio medium, I'm being very sarcastic. He looked like a 60-year-old dude who was learning how to throw a baseball.
I mean, he looks like that when he runs. It's extremely painful. It's just one of those things. I was trying to explain to my wife why it was such a big deal. And I'm like, he's been in the big leagues like since I've been in high school. This guy's old.
I wanted to ask you this one trivia question. I asked my dad this. Can you tell me what players in MLB history have 600 home runs and a pitching performance?
It's got to be him and Babe Ruth, right?
Got to be him and Babe Ruth. That's quite a list right there.
Yeah. It's soon to be Otani. Otani's at 100, so he's got a ways to go.
Yeah, he'll be there before we know it. We'll be old men sitting around like, I watched Shohei Ohtani pitch. Yeah. And it'll be great. And then the final question is, does this change Pujols's Hall of Fame chances? I mean, can a guy with a 36 ERA be a first ballot Hall of Famer?
I was actually more impressed because he actually almost got out of that inning. And it was.
I mean, he did get out.
He almost got out of it, like, kind of pretty cleanly. And then Gonzalez homers and then Joey Bart, you know, credit Joey Bart, go up there and hunt that home run. Nobody's going to care at the end of the year. So that was a bad pitch and he just softball golfed it. And I thought it looked terrible, but he actually was doing a decent job.
Giants, they might run up the score from time to time, but they got to show some respect to the all-time greats like Albert Pujols. So it was very fun to watch that out there.
By the way, did you listen to the run up the score conversation on ESPN?
No.
It was
not. I listened on KNBR.
Okay. It was not. They compared him to the Oakland Raiders for running up the score on everybody. And they're like, people are kind of saying they're the Oakland Raiders in Major League Baseball. I'm like, first of all, I don't even know where that makes sense. Like the rule breakers, I guess, but also who are the people?
Who's you can't just say a lot of people are saying, saying.
I was like, I'm very involved here. This is my life. Every single time they break an unwritten rule, I'm writing four stories about it. Like, I have not had anybody compare them to the Oakland Raiders. Where do you get this?
I mean,
are you telling a national audience,
man? Have you seen like all the dudes in Darth Vader face paint, just getting real rowdy down there in the field club level?
Like, there's a legitimate conversation to be had because they have two big leaguers, former big leaguers on their crew, and David Cone and Eduardo Perez, right? Like, so it's, there's a legitimate conversation to be had about being on both sides of that. And they just went to, they're unapologetic. They're like the Oakland Raiders running up the score on people. I'm like, I don't understand. But thanks for telling a national audience that this is what's going on.
The Giants are the Brian Bosworth of Major League Baseball right now because
it was basically the same thing.
Yeah. Ludicrous. I did see when you put that on Twitter, one of the responses that made me laugh out loud was from Moonwalk McFly saying, because the A's blame both of them for their stadium being awful.
That was a good
response. I did the spit take at that when I was
I rewound that like four times to listen to the conversation. Like, what on earth are they talking about?
I think most people listening to this podcast will agree NBC Sports Bay Area broadcasts are going to be much better than national broadcasts, Apple broadcasts. You know, we know what we're doing over here. Man. Come on.
That was a rough one. So
we could talk about the goofy stuff that happened in St. Louis all day long, but unfortunately we do have to touch on Carlos Rodon having the worst start of his career, one of the worst starts of his career. And Alex, I had never mentally prepared myself for this situation. Injuries? Yeah. Okay. If he goes down, we're going to lose Rodon for a bit. It's going to suck. But in my head, he was going to be infallible as long as he stepped foot there out there on the mound. What did this mean? Does this mean anything? Did this surprise you?
It surprised me because I he's been so dominant that you don't expect his ERA like double basically overnight. So, I don't think it means anything. I mean, the velocity was good. The slider was just not good. And we've seen that a few times early on. And I think against some lineups, he's been able to reach back and go, all right, here's 98. And I've talked to guys on the staff, and he's as good as he has been. He hasn't commanded the ball very well over the last month, and there are times where it's just literally just here's 98, and you know this is how I'm going to get out of the inning. But it's not always going to work. And I was really curious to see how he would do against the Dodgers a couple weeks ago, because that we've seen that they're patient. They're not going to swing at those pitches. And he did pretty well against them, but I think there was going to be a lineup at some point that went like, yeah, we're just going to keep fouling pitches off. We're going to keep fouling these fastballs off, and we'll wait until you make location mistakes, which there were a lot of. So was surprised by the scale of it, I guess, just because of what we've seen, but not concerned really. I'm curious to see what he looks like in a few days, because maybe he needed to reset a little bit and lock in some of the breaking stuff. I don't think his breaking ball has been very good this year. So it's not really sustainable to go through a season just throwing the fastball, even if it is the best fastball. So, well, I'm curious to see what it looks like this weekend, but a little surprised by the scale, but not ultimately worried. It sucks for him because, you know, he was legitimately probably a top two or three Cy Young candidate and now has a lot of climbing to do over the next 5 months.
Well, it's I don't want to say it's shades of, but it is similar to what Giants fans have been seeing with Logan Webb maybe not quite being what they were hoping for this year. The flip side of that, though, is Logan Webb, the only MLB pitcher with 5 wins, and his ERA is what, almost 4, 3.5, 3.75?
3.4.
Yeah. So. You know, he's getting it done. He's still raking in the W's.
Yeah, it was interesting watching him on Friday, because you're like, this is not Logan. You know, again, this is not what you expect. I mean, he's getting ahead of everybody. 0-2.
Came in and shoved against the Dodgers.
Yeah. It's not the guy who was there in the second half. I think he is fighting some things physically. He's having some issues with his arm slot and with his command. But he's winning. So it's not like he's winning because the Giants scored 15 runs. He's winning because he is pitching, you know, 6 innings every time out and doing a pretty good job of holding him. And it was what I saw watching. I was on the post game show on Friday. I asked Evan Longoria what he saw. I thought he gave a great answer. Here's what he had to say about Logan.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about it in the clubhouse after he came out of the game. I mean, I thought he probably had C stuff at best tonight, you know, but that's kind of what, you know, a true number one guy does. He gives us 6 strong innings, you know, 1-run ball. I mean, pitches himself out of some jams and just figures out a way to go out there and get deep into games and give us a chance to win. And, you know, obviously you guys saw the stretch run last year that he had. When he's on, he's really special.
So there, you know, these guys know. I mean, it's really tough when you don't have your best stuff. And we saw what happened to Rodon on Sunday. Logan's finding a way. And I think that's almost more impressive than what he did last year, because he is a guy now. Like, he's not going to sneak up on anybody. Teams have a good game plan against him. They want to get to him. He's not been at his best really since, I think, the second start of the season. And he's still going out there and finding a way. So I think he has a lot of respect in the clubhouse right now. And you heard it from Longoria there, of just the fact that he's given him a chance to win, which is really all he can ask for until he figures this out.
And figure it out he will. I have strong expectations that Logan Webb's going
to. Yeah, he's not hurt. I mean, he'll be fine. He just needs to, you know, it's a guy who had the longest year of his life last year, pitching-wise, and had a very short spring training and went out there on opening day and then pitched 8 innings the next time out. And, you know, in retrospect, maybe the Giants wish they hadn't pushed him that hard early on, but he was cruising, and you feel like this is almost a year now of this guy is infallible. So
yeah,
he needs to just get back on track, but he's not hurt. So
no, I think if anything, he's mentally and emotionally hurt by the fact that DHs came in and swooped.
He might be hurt by Sunday night, but
yes,
he's physically okay.
One other guy who seems like he is figuring it out, maybe finally, Joc Pederson, broke out of his slump, hit a home run. You know, I have his baseball reference page up right now, and it's been a rough last couple of weeks for young Joc. Pretty much ever since mid-April, there's not a lot of numbers in that hit column.
Yeah, basically ever since he got hurt, it's went in the tank. But it's got to be good you know, it's got to feel good to maybe get that one out of the way on Sunday night, knowing you're going to Coors Field for 3 days. Mm-hmm. So you're like, okay, I was planning to go to Denver and get going there, but now we got going on Sunday. So got the home run, got back on track a little bit. Denver's a good place if you've been slumping to find some luck.
And that is a great point. Let's talk Giants heading to Denver. The Rockies are currently in last place in the NL West at a ice cold 500. Let us remind you, this is the best division in baseball right now. They've lost the last, they've lost eight of their last 12 this season, and the Giants have 10 straight wins over the Rockies with 10 plus hits in each game. We talked about that last episode, how this is some serious ownage, but the Rockies do put up a bit of a different fight when they're playing in Coors Field. Alex, are we going to see Chris Bryant this time around? We missed him injury-wise the last time the Rockies came to San Francisco.
We are not. He's supposed to rehab on Tuesday and Wednesday night, I think, and could be back for the weekend series. But that'll have to wait. Is it a reunion? I don't know. What do we consider it? Semi-reunion? We'll have to wait until... I'm going through the schedule here. I mean, they don't even play him for a while. I know they finished the season with them quite a bit, but it'll be a while before the Giants see Chris Bryant.
Okay. All right. He's ducking him for now, but August that's fine.
Is the next trip there. So,
all right. Yeah. Put a little asterisk next to that, and we'll look forward to revisiting our good friend, Chris Bryant. And any other familiar faces we're going to see? Maybe some Giants who haven't been on the team in quite some time.
You talking Giants or Connor Joe Giants?
Oh, I was actually talking Giants. Connor Joe, always good to see Connor Joe.
I mentioned it earlier. I think we'll see Mastella. He seems ready. I mean, he's 9-for-29 on the rehab assignment.
It's time.
Two doubles, two homers. So it's funny because he hit a grand slam the night before Dubon was traded. And it's like, that has more to do with the trade potentially than Dubon getting hot for 3 days. It's just, like, you know what? We're getting with Stella back soon. We know we have to make this move. We can't wait until we have to make the move, because then you really have no negotiating power at all. So I think we'll see him. And if you're Tommy, like, that's like we just talked about with Jock, like, that's pretty nice. Come back to Coors Field. So maybe explains why he extended the rehab assignment. Who wants to go to St. Louis when it's muggy and 85 degrees? Go to Denver. Go and hit.
Smart. And it is funny to hear you say that grand slam could have repercussions like a trade like that. And it's just crazy to think some dude misplaces a slider in Sacramento and things change.
I think the fact that he has found his swing and that he has seemed healthy and has been able to play normal baseball now over there, as opposed to DHing for four innings, that is where you're like, okay, now we can do this, because we know Tommy's coming back.
He's got it. He's figuring it out. He's got it figured out. Well, I'm excited to see him back on the Giants roster. Long overdue. Can't wait. But Alex, you're our Mr. Baseball Food Stadium guy. Giants are in Coors Field. There's going to be a lot of Giants fans. It's a West Coast or a NL West trip. Giants fans like to travel to Colorado, Arizona, any of those
moved to Colorado stadiums.
I think a good amount of people left.
It's all California people now.
They know it's one of those communities where they really dislike Californians at this point, because we've somewhat invaded. But are there any food stands that jump out at Coors Field that Giants fans need to be hitting up? What's the go-to bite there? Alex Eats.
So we did an Alex Eats there, actually. And I will try almost anything. I did not want to do the Rocky Mountain Oysters, which I think I said it at the time, like, people can just Google why I did not want to do it. Have you ever had it?
I definitely had Rocky Mountain Oysters. There's a bar in Rockridge that used to do a really good Rocky Mountain Oyster po' boy. For sure. I'll get into that. I think maybe the fact that I'm getting it at a baseball ballpark would be a red flag for me, because I would be worried.
Where did you find this bowl?
I mean, what am I saying, that Coors Field doesn't have a very good testicle supplier compared to some random sports bar I went to in Oakland? So I don't know. Yeah, I'd give it a go. If next time I'm in Colorado at a baseball game, I will be getting the Rocky Mountain Oysters. All right, I'll let you know how they are.
Polsies with the Rocky. Maybe your dad's there. Maybe he can Later this week if he's ever done. It was actually hard to find because that was kind of their thing. And I'm like, you can give me a burger with chicken fingers and a grilled cheese bun, or you can give me ice cream that's made out of an ice cream hot dog that's made out of a churro. Like, that's fine. I'll make myself sick. I draw the line at bull testicles or whatever it actually was. But it is a difficult place to find good food. I will say it's one of the few places you can legit get wings in the ballpark. Mm-hmm. And the Giants have it now at their ballpark too, but there's a place along the third baseline where you can just go get wings, which I do quite a bit, and a good mac and cheese at Coors Field. So
okay.
I think that's what
I was looking down seats. I was looking down their lineup. Have you ever had a smash burger, Alex?
Of course.
I mean, I don't know what types of smash burgers they're selling at Coors Field, but oh man, making smash burgers in the backyard, there is nothing like that. That's like peak backyard burger. And that's something I would love to check out at Coors Field.
Where I've never gone there? And if any Giants fans go there, remember where Barry Bonds did a home run, to Mile High? That was, 550 feet up. They wiped that whole thing out. And now it's kind of a party deck, which is open bars up there and open seating. And they have fire pits. And I've been up there before games. I've never gone up there during a game, obviously, because I have other things to do. But it looks like a ton of fun. And I know the Giants at some point were considering doing something similar at Oracle Park, but I just love it. It's like a little outdoor bar type area. So if anybody goes to that, let me know how the food is up there or how the drinks are up there. But that, I think that's that seems to be the place to go. And they have a bunch of standing tables, so you get a fancy drink and watch baseball from the upper deck.
Well, you're saying get a fancy drink. I was under the impression you can only get Coors Light and Coors Original Banquet beer.
It's a fancy Coors Field. Coors Light. You get it in
That's true. The champagne of beers.
In a highball glass.
Well, enjoy. Any of you Giants fans who are out in Denver, either permanently or temporarily for this series, let us know. Send us some pictures of your food. Enjoy. Have a good ball game. And Alex, let's hear your interview with Giants hitting coach Justin Vealy. What do you guys talk about and what should we be expecting here?
Yeah, we're trying to do this. We had Mark Hallberg a few weeks ago. I think you and I talked about the coaching staff, nobody really knows them, right? And the Giants, maybe this is not the right day to come off it, coming off of those two games in St. Louis, but for 2 years, they have surprised people with their hitting. So was looking forward to talking to Justin. He is a guy with a lot of ties to the Giants in different ways. He went to Santa Clara. He played at Santa Clara. He coached at Santa Clara. He coached for the Dodgers briefly. He played with Mike Yastrzemski in the minors. So, and when he was hired, he was extremely young and extremely green. And, now he is their lead hitting coach because Donnie Ecker's over in Texas. And I think he is headed for big things because of what they've done here in San Francisco. We saw what happened with Donnie. So, a guy that I don't think a lot of fans know, and I hopefully get to know him a little bit more through this interview and get to know, who is the person behind what they're doing behind the scenes. And then also responsible for there being donuts in the clubhouse.
That's what I was going to ask. Do you ask him about the donuts?
I did. We had to talk about because he lives in the city and he brings a lot of donuts in and had to, of course, discuss our favorite donut places in San Francisco. Are you bringing Bob's donuts into the clubhouse? Is it Johnny's donuts? So we got into that. Those are the two that I go to, but yeah, he's responsible for the donuts, but there's a reason for it. It's not just having donuts.
That is a great tease and promo, Alex. I can't wait. Let's hear what Justin Vealy had to say. Thanks for listening to Giants Talk. Don't forget to subscribe, leave us a review if you're a fan, and we'll be back with more Giants content.
Win a Lexus, cash, and more this month at Graton Resort and Casino. Play to enter the $300,000 Drive Away in Luxury Lexus and Cash giveaway on May 27th, where you could win a Lexus. Plus, more ways to win than anywhere else. Multiplier Wednesdays get up to 7 times the points. Thursdays turn points into slot play. And win up to $15,000 in the Good Fortune slot tournaments. Learn more at GratonResortCasino.com. Complete rules available at the Rewards Center.
Honda is your gateway to spring adventure. Thousands of new Civics, Accords, SUVs, and more are arriving daily. So come in and buy or reserve yours today. For details, ask anyone who owns a Honda or visit NorCalHondaDealers.com.
Justin Vealey, the hitting coach of the Giants. I want to start with this because you were born in Orange County, grew up in Orange County. You went to school at Santa Clara. You worked for the Dodgers. Now you work for the Giants. Where are your rooting interests? What were they as a kid, and how did it change over time?
I was actually a big Angels fan growing up.
That's the right answer.
Yeah, I was in Yorba Linda, so we were about 10 minutes from Angels Stadium. We had season tickets, so I probably went to 40, 50 games every year as a kid growing up, Angel games. So
2002,
The 2002, I don't bring it up often that I was an Angel fan at that point, but I went to like game one of that World Series, and I was like 12, I think, so it was a pretty exciting time for me. I know not so much here, but yeah.
It worked out for you. You're obviously the hitting coach for a team that has really developed the last couple of years from an offensive standpoint. But you were a player too. You were a middle infielder. You did play in the minors. How would you describe yourself as a player?
It was kind of a battle. Like when I got to pro ball, it was just kind of like doing it every day was a lot of getting exposed. Pitchers were just tougher. You had to show up and like be mentally strong every single day. You couldn't think about your 0-for-4 with 3 punch outs the day before. But in college, I felt like I was a defensive first, try to get on base. And then you try to take that to pro ball and that, there's a lot of other guys that are can hit and play defense. So you better be really elite defensively. And I really wasn't. So, yeah.
You're selling yourself short, I think, offensively. You had a .407 on base percentage your first year as a professional. I know the next year didn't go as well.
Yeah.
How did you end up kind of transitioning? Was it your choice? Did they tell you? Did the game tell you?
A little bit of both. I mean, I definitely got released initially by the Orioles the last day of spring training in 2015. And they said you could either stay and coach or you could go look for somewhere else to play. So I took the day to think about it. And I was thinking about going to possibly Italy to play, looking around in other organizations. But, I just wanted to be realistic. Like, am I going to go play just for fun? Because I knew I wasn't going to get to the big leagues as a player. So I was just like, okay, I'll just maybe get into coaching. Maybe I'll really like it. So I just chose that.
When you got hired, I looked up your playing history, and it's kind of jarring to see you played with Mike Yastrzemski. Mm. What do you remember about a young Yaz?
It's really, really similar dude. Really like high standards for, his preparation and his process and competing and winning. And always thought he had a beautiful swing. I still think he has a beautiful swing. Plays his butt off every single night. He wants to play every single day. I mean, he's been the same since I've known him. Him and I were actually roommates on the road in Low A. And he's the same dude every single day.
Do you remember the first conversation when you maybe started to be in the process of getting hired here? Did you reach out to him and let him know?
That's a good question. I'm pretty sure he might have sent me something. One of us sent each other like an emoji or something. Yeah. I think that was the
eyeballs emoji.
Yeah, like something like that. But and then once I was officially hired, then him and I, we talked for a while just about the group, about the players. He kind of gave me background on some of the things that, the past coaches, some things that the guys liked, didn't like, whatever. And kind of just, laid out some good information for me coming in. So
you started as a coach at Santa Clara, your alma mater, and I looked up a story from when you got hired, and the head coach there said his baseball IQ was through the roof. The assistant coach said he's a machine. This is what he was built to do. Did you always think you'd be a coach?
I'm sure a lot of coaches thought I would be a coach.
Yeah.
I always thought I was going to be a player. Yeah. I thought that until the day I was released that I was going to be a player. I didn't really ever see myself as a coach, honestly. I didn't want to see it.
Yeah.
Because when you're in the mode of playing, you just want to be playing. And, you just kind of life happens. And then once I got into coaching, I was like, oh, yeah, this is what I was supposed to do.
Were you able to, once you got to Santa Clara pretty quickly, be like, this is my calling?
Well, I felt it when I started coaching that 2015 season in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. When I was doing that, and it was like simple things like throwing BP on the field or like working with guys in the cage, not even working with them, just like throwing to them and, you know, doing spray charts, like things like that. I was like, man, I like weirdly really like this stuff. And then the more and more I did it, I got to Santa Clara, it was the same deal. I got to explore a little bit more when I was there and cut my teeth a little bit trying different things. And then I realized quickly, like, man, this is really fun.
When you're in Santa Clara, you're one train ride away from Oracle Park, the Embarcadero here. Was that a trip you made as a player or as a coach?
As a player, yeah. We would take the Caltrain up because it drops you off like right at the Stephen Schott Stadium down there at Santa Clara. So we would come to probably like, you know, two games a season. We'd take the train up, sit in the nosebleeds or in the bleachers. Yeah, it was fun.
You become a hitting coach for the Giants, a co-hitting coach with Donnie at the age of 29. Mm-hmm. You had not been a full-season coach in the minors beyond A-ball. When you get that assignment, did you feel prepared for it?
I don't think I've ever like been fully content with the preparation like on my own. That's why I'm like constantly like, all right, what do we got to do? What is next? Like, how much more can we do? What else can we look at? So like, you know, you never feel like fully ready. You know, you hope that you learn along the way and that you put the players first and the culture first, and you listen to the players, and you know, you're just ready for the conversations that you're going to have with the players. But I mean, at 29, coming in with guys like Longo and Buster and Craw and Bell, and, you know, some veterans with, you know, a long history in this game, I mean, that was obviously like intimidating for me, for
How
sure.
How did you go about trying to maybe, you know, prove to them that you belonged?
Well, I think the biggest thing was just like making sure I was listening to them first before I was coming in. And, you know, because I think there's a common theme around young coaches in the game that they're like tech savvy, that they're like innovative, they have all these different things. I wanted them to know, like, I'm a baseball guy, I love baseball, like everything about it. I'm not gonna come in and tell you, like, teach you the computer swing, you know, like that's not really who I am. So I wanted to make sure that they knew that. Me coming in, I didn't want to dissect them right away and change their swing. Like, I just wanted to give them ideas and help them as much as I could and listen to them, and that's kind of the way I went about it.
So you went Baltimore, Santa Clara, Los Angeles farm system. Gabe was there at the time. Farhan was there at the time. What do you remember about the first call from Gabe saying, come join me in San Francisco?
He sent me he called me and said, we want to interview you. And then I got a questionnaire. I was actually at Slugfest in Fort Lauderdale. It's like a hitting conference. I was there. The Dodgers like sent a couple of us out. So I went, I was at dinner with a couple other Dodger people. I saw Cap call. So I took the call, and then I missed the entire conference because I was doing the questionnaire up in my hotel room. 100% worth it, obviously.
It worked out.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I mean, it was just like, I think I was shaking when I was talking to him on the phone, but at the same time, you know, it was so Cap, like, you know, giving me the opportunity of a lifetime to at least even interview and go through the process, which all he's done for me is provide a path to be the best that I could be in this game and give me opportunity. And, you know, without him, honestly, I don't know where I'd be or what I'd be doing. He's given me every opportunity possible.
You have some young hitters now. You know, we love to ask them when you get the call to the big leagues. Elliot, who was the first call you made after you get the call from Sacramento? Mm-hmm. What was the first call you made after you officially took the Giants job?
I FaceTimed my parents. I was in the Hotel Villa. Mm-hmm. Cap and I had just gotten back from dinner, and he made the offer. And, yeah, it was emotional. I mean, it was just an unbelievable time, you know, FaceTiming my parents, telling them that I accepted the job with the Giants, and I mean, I think we all cried. It was amazing. Yeah,
it's worked out really well, obviously. And I know there's, you know, people say there's kind of like a secret sauce here now, and I know you can't reveal anything, but how would you summarize how you are as a teacher and why it's been so successful?
Well, you know, I think we try to let the players dictate our philosophy and our teaching. You know, like, a Tyro Estrada is going to come in and he's going to have different needs than Kirk Casale. And, you know, it's not cookie cutter. We're trying to identify, you know, every advantage we can possibly give each player. And that's different player to player. And I think it would be unfair to cookie cut things. And I think we individualize things really well. And, you know, I think our preparation is very, like, formal, but also really informal. Like, you should see, like, the cage is a place that we want guys to come down and have a good time, yeah. but also learn. Like, yeah. it's not, they come down there and it's like work. Like, we have an unbelievable time in the cage.
There's a ton of music coming out
exactly.
of there.
Exactly. So. And our hitters meetings are fun. They're informative. And, you know, I don't know if we can really pinpoint to anything specifically. It's just, you know, create a good environment. Let the players kind of dictate what we're trying to help them with and what they need, and enjoy each day and take every single day. Like, you know, it's the last game we have. All we're trying to do every single day is show up, prepare, and win. So.
You said cookie cutter, which leads me to my last question. I was asking around about you the last couple of days, and one thing I heard was he brings the donuts.
Yeah.
So he's, how did that start? What's the donut thing that that you're so known for in the clubhouse? And people are grateful for.
So. Yeah, I think, in 2020, I started going to this donut shop. I was living in Palo Alto that season just because there was no traffic that year. So I was living there, and I went to this donut shop, and the donut, I'm just a sweet tooth in general, yeah. but the donut shop was really good. So I brought donuts. We had just lost a lot of games. Like, we lost that series against the A's where we, you know, it was tough here, three yeah. games. And then I think we lost another one. And so I brought donuts because the vibe was just low, and I thought maybe donuts would, like, bring the vibe up. And then we won 8 games in a row.
Okay.
So I brought donuts every single day during that 8 game stretch. And then I kind of just kept doing it, you know, the last couple of years. And I pick and choose which days to bring them. But I would say about 70% of, maybe even more, like 80% of the games last year at home, I brought donuts. Yeah.
So that was the secret sauce.
I mean, just, if there's like winning going on, there's probably donuts
there's
up
donuts
there.
Involved.
If you know, I mean, it's kind of like a superstition type deal. But
I assume you're in the city. Do you have a go-to donut place?
I do. Yeah, I live in Noe Valley, and it's called Happy Donuts.
Okay.
I think there's a couple locations, but it's open 24/7. They got good donuts.
There
you go. Friendly people. So.
There's a lot of 24/7 donut places in San Francisco, so it works out well. Justin, thank you so much for doing this, and obviously a very successful start to your career here, and good luck down the line.
I appreciate it. Thank you.